this is one of the more opinionated and controversial parts of our program. It's called Left, Right, and Center. We do it every Wednesday from 11 o'clock on, or right after the 11 o'clock news. And I'm joined in the studio, as I am most Wednesdays, by Bob Metz.
Hi, Jim.
Slightly to the right, and Jeff Schlemmer slightly to the left, and I'm slightly to the middle. Before we get into our topic today, because this isn't it, I know you guys were listening to a little bit of the last hour. Do either of you, just kind of ask you, Bob, should he lose the medal?
Oh, absolutely not. I think the issue here is then where you have a discretionary situation allowed, you got to wonder why that discretion was exercised. I just know what I know from what I heard on the show this morning, but I got the impression that there was no evidence that this individual had been, you know, smoking seriously. And so my question is, why did the discretion get exercised the way it did?
Jeff, do you should you lose the medal?
Oh, no, not at all. And, you know, we've got laws to deal with other kinds of misconduct. If somebody's suggesting that he's broken a drug law, they should call the police and they can deal with it. You know, that's where that form is. But to say that if you break absolutely any law, you lose medals, then it's like, well, if somebody gets stopped jaywalking over there, do they lose their medal? You know, if somebody has a parking ticket outstanding in Canada, do they lose their medal? It just gets crazy. It's totally the wrong forum.
Can't do it at all. Well, gentlemen, that's not the topic that I have for you today. I'm very curious to hear what you fellows will have to say about this. There is coming to an end in Newfoundland. In fact, it's already ending in some areas and some elements of it. What they called the TAGS program, and I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it is the program of government subsidies and training allowances and so on for the fisher folk in Newfoundland who have seen their way of life change radically because there are no fish anymore. The government has pumped in well in excess of $1 billion into this program over the last, I think, about 4 years with questionable results. Now, the funding is ending, and they are discovering that, for the most part, the people that they have been trying to retrain and reorient and so on are still oriented in pretty much the same direction they were when this program started. That there have not been any significant changes in terms of new employment opportunities in Newfoundland as a result of this program. There have been some new jobs created by virtue of the growth of the economy, but basically they're not much further ahead than where they were when they started the program. The complaint of the people of Newfoundland, the fisher folk of Newfoundland, and I heard one fella say, I thought rather eloquently last night, that if the government does not help us, it is the end of Newfoundland. So my question to you today is, given that scenario, given that if the government subsidies stop, the government money stops, it is highly likely that large numbers of Newfoundlanders are going to have to leave the Rock, as many have already, mind you, but that large numbers are going to have to leave the Rock, and many of these outlying outports, the fishing ports, will probably become ghost towns, will disappear, because there is no role for them in the late 20th, early 21st century. That may change some years out, but for the foreseeable future, it's not going to. My question this morning is, what is the appropriate fate of those fisher folk and the people who depend on the fishing industry? Should the federal government continue to provide subsidies and train them and so on? The rationale is, two rationales. One is, you have a right to live where your home is. Two, the government, even though they haven't admitted responsibility officially, have tacitly taken responsibility for destroying the fish stocks. So do you continue to subsidize them and try to train them to do something else, although what you get a person who's fished all their life to do and keep them in the fish port, nobody seems to know. Is it the government's responsibility to stay there, or is it time for the government to say to them, this is a big land full of opportunity, go and seek the opportunity where it exists? And Jeff, I'll ask you to start.
Well, I'd say that the government can't have it both ways. And if the government wants to say, we're not going to support Newfoundland anymore, then what they should also do is hand over responsibility for the fisheries to the province and say, we'll let you decide what the appropriate cod levels are. For me, it goes back to 1949 when Newfoundlanders voted in a referendum to decide what country to join. And I've read, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I've read that a majority of people voted to join the U.S. And at that time, there was a strong U.S. involvement from following in World War II, where there have been a number of bases built there, and that Joey Smallwood, our father of Confederation, somehow rigged the vote to get them into Canada. So from my end of it, if we want them to be part of the country, we have to support them. If we're not going to support them, then at the very least, we should let them run their own affairs.
Robert?
Well, I don't think it's an either-or situation. I think that what you're seeing is, let's put aside for a moment the issue of whether the government's responsible for mismanaging the resources, which I believe it is. But let's assume it was nature. Let's say something happened in nature where suddenly the cod stock disappeared and all of a sudden all these people found themselves out of work. What would they have to do? Well, they'd either have to be happy with what they have and find other means of employment and stay where they are, or they'd have to pick up and leave and find a job elsewhere or start a job or get involved in something by which they can earn a living. You know, you said that people have the right to live where their home is. Yeah, but every right comes with that responsibility. And if we're asking Ottawa to pay for that right, well, then you just gave the right away. And I cannot imagine a whole group of people totally dependent on the state at the whim of Ottawa whether they're going to get their next check or not. That would scare the heck out of me if I was dependent on some big monolith that state that for starters is bankrupt already. Mm-hmm. And you're going to put a bunch of people dependent on this bankrupt institution?
Bob,
how's that going to do them any good in the long term?
But I'm an outport fisherman, and if you don't continue with these subsidies, I can't fish anymore. If you don't continue with these subsidies, I've got to pack up my wife and kids and leave my ancestral home where my forefathers have been for six generations, and I've got to go to Toronto or some other godforsaken place just to earn a living.
Right. You're not going to be doing any fishing there either. So you can stay where you are and decide not to do some fishing, too. We are... in a world today where the international markets are opening up rather, and you've got to start looking at other ways of making money. You can maybe stay in your home, start a business on the internet. I know many people myself who started very successful businesses strictly on the internet, sitting in their houses, connected to a telephone wire, doing business around the world.
Yeah, but I've been a fisherman all my life, Bob. Come on.
Well, there you go, you know, and if you were in the horse and buggy business and
the government owes me, because you said before, let's assume that the government hadn't destroyed the fish stocks. The fact is the government did. Government mismanagement, they owe me.
Well, they may have some responsibility, then you'd have to sue the government, but I don't think you have a right to some sort of eternal welfare and to a style of living. Otherwise, we'd have to do that with everybody. Don't accountants have that right when they come out, when their jobs suddenly are gone, perhaps because of some regulation the government just did? Don't bankers have the same right? Don't plumbers and florists and doctors? I mean, you could go on endlessly. What's so special about this particular industry?
Well, it's not as simple as eternal welfare, though, that what presumably the government would want to be doing, and I know they've been doing that in the East since forever, is trying to find other things to do.
But isn't that the whole point? They've been doing it forever and that it hasn't worked.
Well, you know, you can't say it hasn't worked. You look at New Brunswick, for instance, where Frank McKenna did a lot of work about seating companies. You talk about phones and how it doesn't matter where the phone is, and you look at the call centers that have been brought into New Brunswick.
But
he got a lot of criticism from sucking it out of other provinces.
He did, but Frank McKenna did that as a provincial premier. He didn't go cap in hand to the federal government and say, give me money to do this.
Oh, well, the federal government's certainly strongly involved in it. Part of it is the whole tradition of seasonal work down there with unemployment insurance, the way unemployment insurance is structured. I was talking to an MP from New Brunswick a couple of weeks ago who said that the big issue in New Brunswick in the last election was the cuts to EI. And the reason it was a big issue is because almost everybody she knows does seasonal work. So their whole life is structured around getting EI all winter. You know, in the summer they're in the tourism business or in forestry.
But do they pay more money during the summer into EI than you and I do? No, they don't. So why should they have a right to work for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months a year in the summertime and go on EI all winter?
Well,
I mean, that doesn't look like it's a sustainable system.
Some people
do it here. Talks about rights on this show. I'm the guy who talks about what makes sense. I'm not saying they have a right to do it. I'm saying that it's in our best interest to do it. And if you look at life in the East, generally, a lot poorer than we are.
Well, wait a minute. How is it in our best interests to encourage that kind of a lifestyle, to say it's okay if you only work 6 months of the year? You don't have to worry about finding, when you're 18 or 19 and you're looking for a career, don't worry about finding a job that will pay you enough money to live all year long. Just find a job that will pay you enough to work for 6 months or 7 months so you can qualify for the EI for the How does that benefit anybody?
Well, that's not what they're doing. For starters, they have seasonal work. Say their economies are driven by tourism, which is a summer job. They have forestry, which is a summer job. Fisheries, summer job. That's just the way it works out there. And whether or not, nobody's suggesting they're layabouts, or nobody's suggesting that the way of life out there is that way because they're lazy. That's just the way that their economy works. Having said that, they're much poorer than we are in Ontario. Ontario is the fat cat of Canada and always has been. And we've always paid money, if you like, to be to have a country surrounding us. You know, Ontario's always been the economic engine.
So how much do we pay to have Newfoundland floating off the coast?
Depends how much we want it.
Well, I think the figure was my brain's not working this morning. More than $1 billion over the last, I think, 4 years in this program.
Which is a pittance for a federal budget. Realistically, how many hundred billion?
But what have we got? Yeah, I know. Do we want to encourage more waste? What have we got for the $1 billion? We've allowed these people to stay in Newfoundland for another 4 years, and by all reports, most of them have not accommodated themselves to the changing reality.
Because they had no incentive.
They hadn't had to do that.
Well, the only accommodation that you or I can suggest is move away from Newfoundland and...
I've already suggested there are other things you can change your
microbusiness is not the solution for unemployment.
Well,
most people can't start a microbusiness.
Anything. It doesn't matter. Whatever else. I've been in three or four different careers in my short lifetime. I can't see why anybody else can't do it. If they're so insistent and they think that Canada is such a bad deal and they're not going to be part of this country unless we pay them to be, well, then let them separate and see how that improves their standard of living. I'll bet you it does.
States would be glad to have them. I'm not talking
about the states. I'm saying just even if they went independent on their own, and just like Quebec wants to do. And so what would they do then? There's no Ottawa to cry to. You think Washington's going
to
handle
it?
I
beg to differ. I don't think the Americans would take Newfoundland with a 10-foot pole. What do they want Newfoundland for?
Well, same reasons they've gathered land all everywhere else in the world. The Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico.
They've got to tie in all their entitlements, all of those federal... I read a study a couple of years ago where they were talking about the breakup of Canada, and the Americans would be running to cherry-pick the country, and you know, they'd be glad to have 10 more states, and it was only one person's opinion, but the result of the article was that the Americans might take British Columbia and Ontario, but they would want no part of any of the rest of them, for a lot of, at that point, very cogent reasons. By the time they plugged everybody into their social systems and balanced that off against the economic benefits of the United States, and Alberta too, against the economic benefits of the United States, they said, why would we want these places? What do we want them for?
If you want to compare British Columbia to Alaska, for instance, I would suggest British Columbia is a lot more desirable than Alaska.
Well, I said
economically,
British Columbia, Alberta, and Ontario. They said we might take them, but you can keep the rest of them. We don't want it.
But you may have a very different perception of the Americans than I have. As far as I sort of grew up with this idea, there were
I'm just challenging the assumption that if a province left, like Newfoundland left Canada, that they'd automatically become the 51st state. I don't think there's anything automatic about it.
Yeah. The other thing to bear in mind, of course, there's always been net migration from Newfoundland. That we all know people who have left the Rock, because the Rock is a tough place to live.
Yeah.
I know a fellow who lived there for a few years, and he was from Ontario. He hated it. It was just bitterly cold all the time. That there's nowhere you could ever go swimming. It was just a tough, barren land. So from my end of it, it's not like they're living in some paradise that we're subsidizing right now. They're eking out a grim living out there in a place that they love for reasons of family or history.
So
but
just because they
I don't
the
envy them.
So they love it, so the government should subsidize them to stay there?
Well, if we want them to be part of our country, then I think it's a good idea for us to try and figure out something for them to do. Now, if you're saying, are we going to pay them UI?
Do they want us to be part of their country? Do they want us to be part of their country? Maybe we should be asking them for money.
I don't think they
otherwise
want to give
we
us.
Won't. Otherwise, we won't be in their country.
Well, we can ask all kinds of poor people to give us money. The fact is, we're the fat cat province.
Oh,
I just don't know how it's going to work.
So then, that's what I was getting back to
like
earlier. Your whole impression of state nationhood has got to do with money, where the money is. Even you were suggesting that, Jim. You said the U.S. would only be interested in the three provinces where they could make a profit.
Mm-hmm. But it's striking
I don't think that's what nationhood is based on, or what governments are all about, or what they should be.
It's not based on profitability either.
But certainly I will agree with you that any country that practices a high degree of socialism isn't in a good position to expand, because it just accumulates more liabilities. It doesn't accumulate assets and income and prosperity.
We have one of the fastest growing economies in the world right now.
Okay, let's refocus a little if we can, and then we'll invite our callers to join us. The premise this morning, the question this morning was, should the federal government continue to pump hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, into programs in Newfoundland to allow Newfoundlanders to stay there? Bob Metz basically says no, they shouldn't. Jeff Schlemmer basically says yes, they should, for a variety of reasons. I'd like to know what you think about it. 643-1290, star 1290 on the Cantel Sailor. This is Left, Right, and Center on Talk of the Town. This is Left, Right, and Center with Jeff Schlemmer and Bob Metz. And our question this morning is, should the federal government continue to pump money into Newfoundland so Newfoundlanders, particularly people in the fishing industry, can continue to live there even though their industry has disappeared? Bob, for a variety of reasons, says no, they shouldn't. And Jeff, for a variety of reasons, says yes, they should. We'd like to know what you think. And let's get John on next. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Jim.
Yes, sir.
I was a little surprised when you said, why would the United States want Newfoundland?
Well, I don't want to get off. That's not really the topic. We can maybe do that on another day. I know there are reasons why they would.
I would think they want it because, and this ties into your topic, because of the one of the best assets that Newfoundland has that the Americans would want. And my contention would be, why doesn't the federal government go to bat for Newfoundland so that that asset generates money for Newfoundland instead of for Quebec?
What asset is that?
Churchill Falls Labrador Power Corporation.
Well, but, you know, a contract's a contract. I hate to say that, but somebody screwed up when they set that deal up.
That's right.
So what do we do now? We break the contract?
Why not have a look? Why is a contract for life? I don't, you know, Roger's contract with me isn't for life.
Well, it would be if you signed it as such, though. If you signed a 100-year deal, it's a 100-year deal. I know what you're saying, and I think it was a bad deal for Newfoundland and Labrador, no question. But in a community ruled by law, where we value the law, where we value property rights, at least as far as they go, how can you say, well, we're going to make an exception in this case? I don't think you can do that, can you, John?
I think you can if you're talking about separation and not being part of a country and this being part of another country. Don't countries take over other countries? And...
Yeah, but Newfoundland's not talking about separating.
Well, that's what you guys were talking earlier about.
No, it was mentioned kind of in passing and as part of the discussion. The heart of the discussion today is, should the federal government be spending money to keep Newfoundlanders in Newfoundland? Do you think they should?
Yeah, to a point, but I think they should be encouraged to be generating their own.
But that's what they're spending the money for, is to encourage them. They've spent more than $1 billion, I think, in the last 4 years, and they've spent tens of billion dollars in the last 50 years. And you know where the good people in Newfoundland are today. They're still, you know, the poorest province. People are still leaving in droves because there's no work. So all this money that they've thrown at them, that hasn't worked so far.
No, it hasn't. And so all they want to do probably is go fishing, and they can't do that because the government's in a kind of a catch-22. They stopped them from doing their job.
Yep.
The other issue I just can never understand is why people continue to believe that government spending to encourage people to get results that they can only get from a marketplace can possibly work. It never has, and it never will.
It worked in Japan after World War II.
It didn't work in Newfoundland since 1949.
Didn't work in Prince Edward Island, and it didn't work in North Bay when they set up these great, humongous government...
And Jeff, what happened in Japan after World War II happened despite the fact that... governments poured money into there. What happened there was that there was a discipline enforced on Japan where they had to open their markets to some degree and had to become part of the world community.
Well, we've read different books. What I've heard is that they had a closed economy where they fostered an auto industry which was nascent, Toyota.
But it was a controlled economy. I think that's the big difference. It had to be a controlled economy, and it's only now that they're breaking out of those controls, and look what's happening to their economy. It's falling apart.
Well, they're still having an awful time, though, trying to import cars into Japan. It's still very tightly regulated.
Tremendous regulation. Well, John, it's not helping them.
John, bottom line to you then, should we continue to put money in, or should we say to the Newfoundlanders, you got to make it on your own like all the rest of the Canadians?
No, I think we got to continue to put the money in. We can't cut off part of the country and just say, too bad.
Okay, thanks for the call, John.
Okay.
Appreciate it. And another John joins us. Good morning, John.
Morning, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have a partial solution to this problem in Newfoundland.
Yeah?
It's based on the solution I have for the income tax problem.
Yeah.
But Newfoundland, being isolated, is very suitable for a test of it.
Okay.
All right, what we would do is we would give every person in Newfoundland a guaranteed income, $5,000 for adults, $2,000 for children.
Yeah.
This would be based, it would be given every month by the government. Now, there'd be immediate tax on any income earned of 20%.
Oh, like above that, above the guarantee?
Above the guarantee.
Okay.
Any income they earned, they get their guarantee, but any income they earned, they would pay 20% immediately back in tax to the government.
Okay.
What this would do is, I mean, the fisherman that's working 3 months a year would be able to earn his income from the fishery.
Mm-hmm.
But during the rest of the year, instead of UI and all the other programs, he would still be getting his check, his wife would be getting his check, and if he had two kids, that would give them $14,000 a year.
So what's different, John?
What's different?
How's anything different?
Ah,
you're just calling welfare.
Can I finish, please? You asked me a question. What's different? So before you put in point, I'd like to finish. This is different is there's no restrictions on this. They are now free to work all year long, and the money goes out. There's no restrictions on this. They don't have to work for a certain period of time in order to get the check. They can now start their industries with this. This would give an economy that now has a base to it. The people who have the income coming in, there's no stigma to the income that's coming in.
So you're saying that there's some legal restriction on them working right now?
Oh, there is. If you want to get out UIC and all the other programs, you have to be unemployed.
Well, then you're saying that people are collecting UIC because they don't want to work. The work's there.
We all know that occurs, so let's not get off on a subtopic here. I know this is a way that...
Well, no, if that occurs, and we both acknowledge that, then how is your plan going to improve the situation? I still don't see how anything's going to change, and I don't see how there's going to be
First
an incentive
all,
for people to want to work when they're still being handed money.
No, they get the job, but now they can work without restrictions on that money. If you're getting UIC, you cannot work and get a job that pays less. This is a formulation that would start a base economy, because people aren't just going to sit there. They're going to go and start to work. They're going to start small industries, so small jobs. The economy improves. It doesn't take long or much money to pay back your $5,000. If you work at a 20% rate of return, then at $25,000 a year income, you've already paid back what you've got.
Well, then you're kind of almost describing sort of a loan. Really,
it's not,
aren't
it's not a loan. It's a guaranteed income, which the government is doing. Instead of giving subsidies for every program, they go and supply every... Even the premier...
Well, it's not a loan in the sense that someone has to sign a liability, but it works as a loan in the way you've described it.
Excuse me, sir. It's not a loan. It's a government check that goes to everybody. It's reverse income tax. What happens is, instead of them taking money away from you on your income
tax...
No,
but didn't you say that they pay it back when they go back
to
work
through
a 20% tax?
No, they pay it back through their income tax of a 20% tax.
Well, that's why I'm saying you're describing something that works like a loan, but you're just calling it something different. You're saying that the government should hand these people X dollars, whatever it is, and that they will pay those dollars back from their future taxes.
This could also work in the whole country as a whole instead of the tax system that we have today.
Well, you know, I kind of would agree with you on that, and I sure wouldn't have any problem with a welfare system that obliged the recipient of welfare to pay it all back after they've gotten off welfare.
But this isn't a welfare system, sir. The top lawyers would get it. The premier of the province would get it. Everybody in Newfoundland...
Oh, well, no. You can't have a universal system and expect to help the people at the bottom.
It's income tax, because these people would then pay back.
Well, where's money
not
all coming
back,
from?
But the money would come from the income tax.
And where's that money come from?
That comes from the money they earn for starting from the first dollar they earn. They pay 20 cents.
No, but where's the initial money come from? The first $5,000 you want to give them when they're not working? That comes from somebody else's pocket.
No, but if somebody takes a job and only makes $10,000 a year, the government gets back $2,000 in tax.
So how much should a lawyer get for guaranteed minimum income?
The lawyer gets the same $5,000. If he makes $60,000 a year, he pays back 5% of that, or $6,000 in tax, and therefore there's a positive return on that lawyer of $1,000.
So you're saying everybody in the country should have a $5,000 guaranteed
income?
Everybody
in Newfoundland, you could do it as a test case and see how this would affect it.
So
if you study economics, you'll understand how this works.
And what about those people that take that money and choose not to go to work? We just forgive them?
They take their money. We call it a Canadian Newfoundland citizen's right, but you wouldn't find that. It's a positive. There's no negative to them
so
now going
saying,
out and getting a job,
you're saying then
starting
that
small companies, starting small furniture factories,
okay,
going out in the fishery. There's no negative to that now.
You're saying then, though, that if they cannot survive on the $5,000 and they do not choose to do anything else,
they don't get anything.
They don't get
more.
Anything else.
They get nothing
That's
else.
It.
All the other programs are gone. There's
okay.
no UIC.
What
There's
about
no
the
other
people that can't find
program.
More work? But what about the people that can't find more work?
Well, Jim, you've got a husband, a wife, and four children. That's $14,000 a year. They might be able to live on that. And they can also now, if you go to, you've
in
got
fact,
that.
They could live on that.
Yeah, so why work?
Well, because most people do want to work. You'd find that maybe 10% of the population or 20 wouldn't work.
Bob,
but now we've got
50%. Isn't that your premise, though, Bob, is that given the proper incentive, everybody does want to work? Isn't that what you keep
telling
us?
Well, that's right. And John's recommending something that I think has taken away an incentive. Sometimes that $14,000 or $5,000 may be the critical straw that is the incentive factor.
It also is a factor that allows people now to go out and start jobs, because when you go to a bank, sometimes they say to you, well, we give you this one, what are you going to live on? And if you've got that $14,000 that's coming in, the bank knows that. They might give you a $5,000 loan to start a small business. There's a lot of natural resources in Newfoundland that allow people to go out and perform and to start many small industries of things that they might not be able to make, have made a full-time living on.
Right,
but
John,
now they've got this money coming in, they can now go out and do that, and you'll be surprised how much industry start. This is not any government any government program. This is making everybody equal, giving them a start, and letting them work. And
okay,
it could work
John?
Across the country. But Newfoundland is isolated. We could go in there, and we could test this system and get rid of all the bureaucracy that's involved
and
everything
else. Yeah, you made your point. I appreciate your call. Thanks for the call.
John actually made a very interesting point in mentioning how business might react. You know, if business moved into Newfoundland under John's plan here, they could pay very, very low wages, possibly below the minimum wage, and still pay enough to increment everyone's wages.
Might revitalize the province.
Yeah.
Third world, right?
If you believe
that. Third world at our doorstep. We got like that.
Let's go right back to the phones with Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I want to say, first, of all the people that I've met in this world, I have not met one person from Newfoundland that I have not been treated with respect and dignity to. So when I put the question to you this way, it's not that in disrespect.
Okay.
I have a question for you, bye, and if you stay where you're to, I'll come here at with the idea. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
Why doesn't the government get together with an organization, whether it be a Japanese automotive company, German automotive company, somebody give the first shot to Canada and the United States, and if they're not interested, then go after somebody else, and give them a massive acreage of land where they can construct an automotive plant, then educate the people that are out of work. Like, for example, I deal with the Cammies and all these other places and all the little spur companies that make the dashboards. And
Jerry, I can answer your question. I can answer your question why the government doesn't do that. Because those companies have no interest in going to a place like Newfoundland, and here's why. Give them the land. They don't care about the land. The cost of the land over the course of the life of a factory is minuscule to a big company like that. The land cost does not matter at all. So what else can you give them? You've got a place that's way off the beaten path in terms of getting supplies and services to it. It's very expensive to do that in Newfoundland. You've got a workforce that's untrained, and there are trained workforces in places all around the world where you could build your plant much more cheaply and have a trained workforce waiting for you. That's why we don't see those kinds of projects in places like Newfoundland. It's a great idea, except they're too expensive.
Yeah, but do you ever think of one thing? The natural harbors of Newfoundland is off the beaten track. The harbor in St. John is bigger in size than the harbor in New York.
But all the people are in New York.
Salem, Massachusetts used to be bigger.
Why don't they build cars in New York then?
What I'm talking about, first of all, there's no room for the plant. It's all taken up unless they do it in Central Park. But no, I was saying if the government somehow could work out a deal where the part of the cost of the building the plant, everything would, and then the spurs that would come off of that plant, the people that can no longer fish could learn tool and die work or learn textile work.
Jerry, there's no...
Yeah. I think it would be a great idea. Throw it to your people there, and I'll let you go and then see what happens.
All right, thanks, Jerry. Well, let's ask each of you in turn. Jeff, what about Jerry's idea? Is that a potential solution, that the government give huge tax concessions and give them the land and do whatever it takes to get a major manufacturing plant there?
Well, there is some analogy to that. I think of the southern United States, for instance. South Carolina and North Carolina in the last 10 years have got a Mercedes plant. They're building the 4x4s.
Alabama, isn't it?
Is it Alabama?
I think
okay.
It's Alabama.
And the BMWs, convertibles as well, that I suppose there's an attractiveness to low wages, and theoretically if they get low enough, then they may compete on a third world kind of a basis. The other thing that I'm aware of is that the auto industry is increasingly global, that is, the parts are made all over the place and shipped all over the place, but on the other hand, if it was such a great idea, I would have thought it'd be done by now, so I don't know how that works.
Bob, about from your perspective, from the right side of it, does that make any sense?
I'm thinking of this whole idea that government can sort of spur business. Government can't do anything but inhibit business. It taxes business, it taxes employees, it taxes the marketplace. Government is not a positive force in the marketplace. Again, I have to hold that every dollar that government spends is a dollar spent badly because it's forced spending. Every penny that you've taken out of your pocket and spend against your will is not value you got for your money, and that's what the issue. There's so much of the depth of economics that's missing in most people's understanding. Like when I hear Jerry's suggestion of why doesn't the government just make this deal and, you know, go to Newfoundland, get a factory, start it all up. It sounds so nice on that superficial surface, but it totally ignores every principle of economics and motivation of market and all sorts of behaviors. It's not going to happen.
But on the other hand, though, leave aside the government subsidy issue and just talk about whether it would make economic sense to build a factory there. And I think about, you know, we ship cars over from Korea. We ship them a lot further than Newfoundland to get them here. What is uncompetitive about Newfoundland per se?
Well, Jim just went through a whole list of all the problems they have in Newfoundland.
Say distance isn't...
But Newfoundland's, you know, geography's part of it, the lack of an infrastructure developed that can support everything that they need to do, the access to markets, all those things are considerations. And in a fluctuating world market, sure, Newfoundland, I think, could compete. I think Newfoundland, left to its own devices, without the rest of us trying to stick our noses into their business by helping them, quote, would probably do very well. It would find its niche, but its niche right now is no longer fishing or in the cod industry, and if we keep sending them money, they're not going to get the message.
Okay, let's go back to the phones where Wayne joins us from Grand Bend. Good morning, Wayne.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Great, thanks.
Good. Wayne.
Good. Listen, we're kind of in the story here, like we can't see the forest for the trees. We're bringing in people from Mexico, Jamaica, and other places every year to do the menial jobs that Canadians don't seem to want to do, such as farm work and summer transient stuff.
Yep.
Why not look after our own people first, rather than giving them out handouts? Say, here's a job for you. It happens to be in Ontario, or it happens to be in British Columbia, or wherever. There's no work for you here, but there is work for you there. And what's the difference for them relocating versus people coming to Canada from all over the world?
That's the whole question is, though, do we want to force Canadians, and if you cut off the government funding, you are forcing Canadians to leave their homes to find work. Is that right or wrong?
Well, what's the difference of the people coming here from all over the world now?
Well, they're not Canadians, though. We're not concerned about them.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Let's be concerned about our own people first.
But again, do you want to say to Canadians, do you want to say to the fisher people in the outports, you have to leave the home where your family's lived for six or seven generations, and you have to go to Ontario to pick apples if you want to eat? Do we want to say that to
them? Of course.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a matter of survival.
Mm-hmm.
Who made Canada? People that left their homes,
yeah,
all over the world.
Yeah.
And we cannot keep on having a welfare system.
All right.
There's jobs here. I'm a small mom-and-pop business. For sure, within 2 weeks, we could employ 20,000 people in this province of Ontario. I'm just picking that 20,000. Mm-hmm. It'd be a lot more than that. If we would take people that haven't got a job and are living on the welfare system, I could pay them $5 an hour. The government could pay them $5 an hour, mm-hmm, plus their benefits, mm-hmm, giving them $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But my position is I cannot pay $7 an hour plus the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wins. The taxpayers save $5 an hour. The people get a $10 an hour living instead of minimum wage.
Yeah.
It's such a simple solution. And I think that's the problem to our whole system now. We're looking for difficult solutions to a simple problem.
All right, Wayne, thanks for the call today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We have to pause for just a second. When we come back, Elaine's going to join us on Talk of the Town. Jeff Slumber, Bob Metz, and Jim Chapman here, left, right, and center on Talk of the Town. And Elaine has been waiting very patiently. Good morning, Elaine.
Hi, Jim. I just thought about the immigrants. Why not send all the new immigrants to Newfoundland with their money and their ideas to create jobs? Like, would that be a possibility?
Well, we certainly have the ability as a sovereign nation to direct new immigrants to our country. We have, and we've done it in the past. In fact, I think are there still not some residential quotas that you only, so many people have to go here and so many there? There were at one time. I don't know if they're still there now. Yeah, we could do that. It's within our power.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the problem is just like the population, too. They don't have much of a population you know, to...
Well, I'll tell you, though, if you told immigrants that if they came to this country, they had to go to Newfoundland, it certainly would be an effective way of cutting immigration. Because I don't... A lot of people come here for the opportunity,
yeah.
not to bring an opportunity with them.
That's
They're leaving
true.
Countries that don't have the opportunities that Canada has. And so here we are sitting about talking about Canadians
uh-huh.
who live in a country with the opportunity, but who just don't want to move from one part of it to the other. And we're going to solve their problem by bringing in immigrants. There's no solution to this.
Well, their country is worse than Canada. Some of these countries are communist countries and
sure.
whatever,
mm-hmm.
and they're not like easy to do business in or make a profit, but it would be a better alternative to the country they're in.
Oh, I'm sure you might find some very resourceful people who just might do that.
But
yeah.
I wonder what the reaction of the people of Newfoundland would be from the, I think their perception might be that you're dumping all these immigrants on us. We already
no,
don't
no.
have a
Again,
it depends who you're talking
Newfoundland
about, though.
Are very warm-hearted and generous. You wouldn't have that problem
well,
there.
Well, I think, yeah, I understand all of that, but the people of Newfoundland are just like people everywhere, and you start threatening their livelihood, and they're going to get real ugly.
No, but it would be creating jobs. Like,
well there's
you know,
a class of immigrants that you can get in. You can get into Canada, if, and I can't remember what the dollar number is, but if you've got it, it's $500,000, whatever the
yeah.
cutoff is. If you've got that, you're automatically come on in. If those are the folks you're talking about, then they probably would welcome them. If it's unemployed immigrants, they probably wouldn't be too happy about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm just thinking, like, Frank Stronach was, like, he was an immigrant.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so he came to Ontario, of course,
yeah.
and he did really, really well in
mm-hmm.
open companies.
Mm-hmm.
But if he were to go to Newfoundland, if that was kind of his only choice, maybe that could have happened down there.
It might have. On the other hand, he might have ended up on the welfare rolls in Newfoundland, too, for all
of
us.
Oh, Frank Stronach? I doubt it.
You never know. Thanks for the call,
Elaine.
Appreciate
but,
it.
By the way, but we've been talking about, like, Newfoundland or the rest of Canada. Let's face it, there are other choices, both for immigrants and Newfoundlanders. They can go to other countries. They can
yeah.
go to Europe. They can go to the States.
Oh.
They can go to the Southeast Asia.
So you're quite right. So let's refocus.
We're not the only answer.
Let's refocus back to where we originally started. Should the federal government be spending money to keep Newfoundlanders in Newfoundland? Let's have Jerry join us. Hi, Jerry.
You know, I don't know where to start with you guys. I'm a pretty proud Newfoundlander, you know?
Yeah.
And I listened to you three guys there, and one guy said that's one way to stop immigrants from coming into the country, you send them to Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
What an insult.
Why? That wasn't meant as an
because
insult, Jerry.
You first talked about the weather, which you haven't got a clue on. Have any of you three ever been in Newfoundland?
Yeah, Jerry, that's not the point. Wait a minute, Jerry. I'm going to give you an opportunity to speak here, but you've got to speak in the context of our conversation. The comment about the weather, somebody said that someone else had said that's what they felt about the weather in Newfoundland.
Yeah.
Okay, so fair is fair.
Yeah.
Bob's comment about the immigrants was because there is not a lot of economic opportunity in Newfoundland right now, and that's the problem we're talking about, to tell people coming here that you have to go to an area of our country that is already in serious economic problems, they're probably not going to want to go there. Now, that's not insulting anybody.
Okay, I was 17 years old when we went into Confederation
mm-hmm.
with Joey Smallwood and all these henchmen.
Yeah.
I seen what went down there. I was among...
No, Jerry, that's not what we're talking about.
No, but you... Well, let's get... What I'm getting up to is Churchill Falls.
Yes.
They literally give it away.
They did. And we've talked about that earlier on the program, and that's a big problem, but that's not the
that
issue...
Started it,
that's
yeah.
not the issue but we're talking about today.
That's when people, like on Bell Island, we had the biggest iron ore
yeah.
company
yeah.
in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They closed down, and all the men from Bell Island went to Cambridge, which was called Galt then.
Yes.
And they, after a while, they got all their families up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what you don't realize is there's more Newfoundlanders in Canada, as far as Ontario goes, than there is in all of Newfoundland.
Yes.
Yeah,
in New
true.
York.
Yeah.
They couldn't do the steel work without the Newfoundlanders
that's
and the
right.
Indians.
But, Jerry, that comes back to our question again, that because those Newfoundlanders who had to leave, or who did leave, chose to leave to make lives for themselves somewhere else in Canada, most of those Newfoundlanders have been fairly successful. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, and I had to leave. I didn't want to leave.
And you did, and you came here, and you're successful, but our question...
Well, I went to the States first
okay,
with
Jerry,
my relatives
Jerry,
in Massachusetts. But
our question is, today, 1998, the federal government is facing a decision. They have to make a major decision. Do we continue to pump hundreds of millions of dollars into Newfoundland for programs that don't do anything other than just allow people to stay there? Or do we say to those people in Newfoundland, folks, it's a great country. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives have had to leave and have found prosperity elsewhere. You're going to have to make that same decision. Which do you think the federal government should do?
No, they shouldn't. They shouldn't support people that are I have to agree with that. They shouldn't support people that are not going to contribute to the economy down there. They should get out and do what I did and a lot of other Newfoundlanders. But you're looking at people in the fishery, in the outports, that are in their 50s and 60s.
Yes.
And they say to themselves, well, where else do I go?
And that's
what do I do?
That's a very good point. And those are the people that really put the pedal to the metal on this one here. Jerry, thank you for the call. I have to leave it. We're running short on time, but I'm glad you called today.
Okay.
And Ray's up. Good morning, Ray.
How are you doing today, Jim?
Fine, thanks.
You know, when I was 17, I was living in London area, and there was no work here, so I went to Winnipeg for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Found work, worked for those couple of years. Things changed a little bit, but I came back home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. I don't think that Canada should have to send out that much money. If the area that they live in cannot support them, then they should move to where they can. They don't have to sell their land or anything, and mm-hmm. if times change or they become prosperous elsewhere, then they can retire back to their family homesteads or, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
But
which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Exactly. But Canada should stop pumping money into a dead end project, because it's never gonna help. If it hasn't helped so far, then how's it gonna change? It's not.
We're talking about the cod stocks right now. That's a pretty recent problem, and I think the question isn't whether you should let it go on forever. It's like, do they need some help to get kickstarted or not?
Okay, well, so they've been doing it for 4 years, whatever. They're talking about doing it for another four or something like that.
Which is nothing as far as an industry, setting up an industry goes.
But they haven't set up anything.
And they shouldn't.
All they've done is pump the money in.
That's a disagreement.
They're not setting
up. Is there any hope for it, or should we just shut her down?
There's a lot of people unemployed in Ontario as well.
Yeah. It comes down to, can you do anything about it, or should you just cut your losses?
Cut your losses. Enough people will have to move, if they have to. Therefore, leaving the people that don't move, that can stick it out or tough it out or whatever, then they will find work. There is work. If you can't find a job, then you make a job and you get on with it.
You're right. It may be like, for instance, you've got Hibernia out there. There are things happening, and it may be that if those bloom, you may have another Alberta. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, yeah, true enough. And then, okay, so 10 years from now, the cod stocks come back, and everybody's happy, and
everybody's rushing
there
to Newfoundland then.
Right.
Then they can go back.
Yeah. Yeah, Ray, thanks for the call.
But you got to do what you got to do.
Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
And he, you know, used the example of going west. I went west in the late 60s, as a lot of young Canadians of my age did, because that's where the action was. That's where the jobs were. That isn't the case nearly as much anymore. A lot of people have come back since then. You go where the jobs are. We have to pause for a moment. We'll come back and get some final thoughts from both of our guests this morning on Left, Right, and Center. Guys, we have about 30 seconds each. Jeff, do you still believe that we should be pumping the money in?
Yeah, that's what a confederation is all about, and that there are times when some of our other citizens go through tough times, and this is one of them. We have to help them get through until we get some fish back out there.
Bob, what's wrong with helping them temporarily?
Nothing wrong with helping them temporarily if it's done as voluntarily as possible and as briefly as possible. I don't like the universal aspect of it, putting in these permanent solutions to a temporary situation, because then we are hooked on the welfare hook forever.
Gentlemen, thank you. Always a pleasure. Next Wednesday, Bob and Jeff will return for the next edition of Left, Right, and Center. Tomorrow we have a local investment counselor who says we are all in danger as we're maximizing our RSPs and doing our investments. He says we are not getting the protection we deserve, and too many people don't know that. You'll meet him and find out what he's concerned about tomorrow. Also, toe-to-toe with Ms. Dawn, if she's back. In the meantime, for Jeff and for Bob and for Ryan, this is Jim saying take care of each other, mind how you go, and we'll see you on the next edition of Talk of the Town.